What is up, everybody? Welcome back to Deciphering Dynasty. We're talking about Dynasty rankings today. Little common myths. I don't know. I put myths, fact, or fiction. It's the same, I think. I don't know. I don't have the English degree there for dictionary, but we're going into kind of some things that are going on. You know, I kind of talked about, you know, there's some rankings discussions going on right now in times of Dynasty. It's a weird time. It's April, right before the draft, so everybody's kind of talking about different stuff. But I thought it'd be great to talk to Leo about kind of, you know, rankings discussion, keep trade cut, like CJ Stroud, it's dead time. So CJ Stroud went QB1. Everybody lost their mind. I didn't. I've been too busy to really look at it. But I thought somebody brought this up about keep trade cut. Now, we've talked about keep trade cut before, but someone sent this. I'm going to get the name in a minute. My mouse is dead, so I can't hop over there. But I will give you proper credit, I promise. But they said keep trade cut represents the daily, weekly market value. It's the Dow's ups and downs. How you play the market is the skill in assessing future value and hedging risk. It's the portfolio you keep. I thought that was a very, very solid description of keep trade cut. I really liked that version of it. And I think that the people who get so mad at it, they do it just for clicks, I think, in the same way as like maybe people that post like CJ Stroud QB1. Because it's like, yeah, like obviously in single leagues, we don't think CJ Stroud is probably QB1, for example. But it does show you how the market's like the Dow's. It's up and down, how it fluctuates. And I think that was a really perfect example of it. What do you think about that, kind of that takeaway from Keep Trade Cut, but also like just that assessment of it? Because I thought that was perfect.
Yeah, I think it's a really good breakdown on what it is. I think the component, the layer that I would add to it is what it represents as an actionable change in value that you can exploit or capitalize on it. But I think the key to it is, do you execute the basics of your dynasty league well enough to be able to then pivot at a moment's notice? Because this is extremely volatile, right? It changes on a daily basis, and you always want to capitalize on that variance. And we talk about taking swings, and missing isn't a failure unless you know, wallow in it. But again, your ability or your ability to take a big swing, take advantage of something like this, a daily reaction on keep trade cut, really, again, comes down to how well do you handle the basics. If you struggle with the basics based on league size, scoring system, waivers, and you don't capitalize on some of the core components of your league, your ability to take swings is minimalized. But if you handle the basics well, then you can take some pretty big swings. And again, you can try to take advantage on that actionable change, because that's really what it comes down to. All of a sudden, Stroud goes to quarterback one, and unless you're 100% all in, which probably comes down to about 15% or 10% maybe of the dynasty community might buy that ranking, but the rest, everybody else is going to try to sell and capitalize on that, you know, that spike in activity or value.
I also think that when you look at it, and I've been saying this multiple times, and this is why I hope people understand it too about this, like, we are playing dynasty, but in my experience, it has evolved to redraft plus 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 plus, and it's the way I look at it. The build of building juggernauts 3 to 4 years out, that's kind of gone on the wayside, in my opinion. Like, you can still build those things. Those things can happen very, you know, fluently through your league, what you're trying to do. But the way I look at these rankings is, you have to just be as actionable as you can. Like, hey, bam, I got this. I know this player likes CJ Stroud. I understand kind of where he got drafted. Hey, can I move off of it? And then you have to be willing to take some risks now. So, like, for example, I don't even have this on the show sheet, but I'm just going to throw it at you anyway. A lot of guys are saying right now to move CJ Stroud for, like, you know, Anthony Richardson plus, 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 or something like that. That's a risk, right? Like, inherently, it's a risk for Richardson's side. I mean, he's already got the workout videos, though. We're in full April mode, because I saw the workouts of his hamstrings and his calves, and they were talking about it the other day. I love that shit. But so you have CJ Stroud there. Like, inherently, like, you'll see that advice out there a lot. And, like, for me, that's easy to say, but to do it in your league is a whole different strategy. Like, if I have Stroud, it is very hard for me to pivot off of Stroud. And I love, you know, I love Anthony Richardson, but, like, I guess it would be like that tier of that player that you would get back. But even then, it's hard to hit that accept button. Like, there's a difference between what you hear and, like, the actionable kind of, like, oh yeah, you could do that. Now, are you comfortable with that? Cause I've seen plenty of dynasty analysts that I played in leagues with like they'll say I see them talk about players or trades, but then you can offer them that same trade. They won't do it in their league because it's a whole different thing, I think, than actually doing in your league. So like I keep that in mind too when I give advice. Like, would I really be willing to do this? Is my mouth, you know, cashing the checks that I can cash?
Yeah, so it really comes down to two things for me, I think. Are we talking a tier change? Or are we talking ceiling value? And for me, Stroud right now is ceiling value. We're not talking about a tier break and moving down or moving up or, you know, moving off of a particular player within the same tier. Stroud's value is at its ceiling. It really is. Richardson's isn't. I mean, there's a lot of expectation, but it's not at its ceiling. And then the other factor would be, what is the insulation that's baked into the trade? Mm-hmm. And it really comes down to what's that motivating factor that moves the needle for you? Is it one first? Well, if you're really not comfortable pressing that accept button, maybe one first isn't enough. Maybe it's got to be CJ Stroud and a third for Richardson and two firsts or something like that, that where the insulation becomes enough of a compensation that you're comfortable if the one-for-one player swap doesn't work out perfectly. If Stroud ends up being the top quarterback and Richardson is quarterback five, well, you can still feel good when you go to bed at night because you potentially got a first or a first and a third or whatever that compensation was. It wasn't straight up. So those are the two factors for me. Are we talking ceiling versus tier? And are we talking enough of a compensation back to offset what I think the difference is?
Yeah, because I think that's a perfect, you know, encapsulation of what it is. If you think that this is a ceiling, this is ultimate, obviously QB1 would be. I still think QB3-4 is probably more of his realistic dynasty ceiling, and that's where it's at. Without the rushing upside for Stroud, that's where he's going to finish. Like that in fantasy, he could be the best quarterback ever. Allen, Mahomes, they have that. Like they have that rushing upside. Hurts, for example. This is an interesting question then too. You know, looking at it in a vacuum, let's say you're in a dynasty startup. Let's rewind 10 years ago for Leo because he doesn't do dynasty startups anymore. But if you're sitting there,
I'll play along.
And it's 6 point, you know, I'll just go with obviously if we go 6 point rushing touchdowns, going to heavily lean there, but let's just do 4 rushing touchdown for quarterbacks just to kind of go from there, just to kind of talk about, this and 6 point passing touchdowns. Who would you rather have, Stroud or Hurts? Where are you at with those two?
I think that is a coin flip, really. Okay. I mean, I think that I would probably lean Stroud simply because I think that the window may be a little longer for him at his ceiling than Hurts may be. So I would lean Stroud a little bit, but the rushing is the factor. I mean, that's the secret sauce, right? That's the differentiator between a really good passing quarterback and you know, Stroud has such a long runway in front of him, especially now with, I know, Diggs in his contract and everything else, but conceptually, I mean, that they've proven that they're going to put talented players around him. They are going to capitalize on this rookie deal and significantly add pieces to this offense. So I think you can feel safe in that. I mean, personally, if I could get Hurts in a piece, then I'm going Hurts in a piece. But if it's draft and I just have to select one of the two in a startup draft, then I am going to then I'm probably going to lean Stroud, but I would make an attempt in a startup to trade back. If both are on the board and I could potentially just move back maybe two or three spots or even trade out, but I would look to trade back in that instance and try to capitalize on something based on the hype and you know, just all the talk and hyperbole that's going on about Stroud in the upcoming season.
Yeah, and I think when you're looking at it from last year, fantasy points per game, when you're looking at Stroud, he was 10. Obviously came out a little stronger, you know, at different parts. He was a rookie, so you try not to take too much away from that. But guys that finished ahead of him was Brock Purdy, Jordan Love. Like, those guys are still in there in terms of points per game. Justin Fields is a top 7 guy when he's on there because of that rushing upside that we talk about. But I think the guy that Maybe I'm a hater too, because you know I go back and I look at kind of the stats, and I struggle with where he should be ranked. Lamar, you know, he finishes QB3. He was 21.3 fantasy points per game. He has that rushing upside too, and that is where that if you're in a startup and you feel like maybe someone really wants Stroud, they value him as QB1. You're sitting there at three, maybe moving back and then be able to get Lamar if this 6-point rushing touchdown, or however it is in terms of rushing, could be the move too. Like maybe you just move back, you move off of that Hurts tier, and you get into that range. So I think it's an interesting discussion in terms of ratings.
The age is what the driving factor is, because regardless of what we talk about being, you know, the days of 4-year dynasty, you know, kingpin rosters is kind of over and you play in a smaller window now, that you can never really get truly away from the age factor in dynasty. And the fact that if you look at all the other quarterbacks that are kind of in that, you know, top 7-8 range, I think the next youngest one is probably Herbert at probably 26 or something like that. So you're talking Stroud at 22. I mean, that's a big difference. Lamar's 27. I mean, everybody's aging. Even Hurts is what, 25 now, I think. So I think all of them are aging. So that 22 really stands out, even though you've got to kind of rein it in mentally as you strategize, again, because of what we talked about. Are you really playing for 4 years out? But especially in a super flex, when you're looking at 22 years old and you're looking at potentially being the top quarterback based on your ability, that's a tough combination to not overvalue.
100%. And full disclosure, because, you know, I got to be honest here. Me and I have a co-manager, because I don't really do leagues anymore without a co-manager because I don't have a time. We were sitting at the 103. It's a C2C league, so it's you play college too. In our draft, and this was before the Diggs news and all that, we took CJ Stroud. But we really couldn't. We tried to trade back. No one would trade back with us. We're like, we don't have any CJ Stroud. Let's take him. So that also comes into play too there. Now we got a guy, Baby Genius. He's calling for Leo, not me. So he don't give a shit what I have to say. But Leo, he says, I need you, brother. So let's put the trade up and then we'll kind of talk about some more ranking stuff. So he's got Amon-Ra, Calvin Ridley, 203, 208. Or are you going Tyreek, London, Najee Harris, and the 201? So I would say the big piece, obviously, is Amon-Ra. Where do you feel like he's in that tier in terms of where Tyreek and London are? Probably back end wide receiver ones with Tyreek aging out a little bit. I guess the question would be, like, regardless of what we know, this is probably a win now for both sides, if I had to guess right. Where would you be leaning with this? This is a difficult one, I think.
Wow. Yeah, no, that is very, very close, just overall value. In a vacuum, I kind of like the Sun God side just a little bit more. But again, if I'm ready to challenge for a title this year and I can count on Tyreek in a 2-year window and I can have London as well with the upside potentially with that coaching change and what that's going to look like, that's tempting itself. But in a vacuum, I would side with Amon-Ra and Ridley, and those two picks is where I would be if I had to pick in a vacuum.
It's very close. You didn't ask me, Baby Genius, but I'm going to give you my damn opinion anyway. I think I would lean Amon-Ra because I think he's clearly the best piece in this deal. I think win now, I think he could possibly outperform Tyreek. I like London. I do. Maybe Ridley, though, does something in terms of like similar where you're like, hey, he's done enough where I can plug him in there. I guess the real big thing is if London really gets into that top 7 category. That's really the kicker on this one. But I like the picks. I don't think 203, 201 is too much of a weird tier in there. You're basically giving the 203 for Najee anyway. Then the 208 is a throw in there. I lean Amon-Ra because he's the best player of the deal. And I think that he could at least have production of Tyreek too in terms of fantasy points and younger. And he still can compete with that duo there. I don't love Ridley, but I mean, it's one of those things where you take the best player of the deal there. All right, we're going to talk about a couple more things. And if you have questions, you throw them in there. If we get to them, we can. We're going to talk about rankings a little bit. Just a couple guys here I just want to throw out there because it was interesting as I was going through some of the rankings. I found these two very close and very hard right now to kind of go at. And this is also the time that a lot of managers get bored. So just to keep this actionable, you can probably send some of these deals that we talk about or some of these things, like, because people are moving guys right now. You know, I saw somebody tear down from Trey McBride to Kincaid recently, or they tear down. Like, there's a lot of tearing down going right now, and maneuvering in between for those picks. So we have Dalton Kincaid versus Kyle Pitts. Very close in terms of this. I know we kind of mentioned Pitts a little bit, but now context is different now because we have Kincaid out there. They don't have another wide receiver yet. Kind of, right? They're out there. They're probably going to add to that room. They're going to have to. But where are we at with Kincaid versus Pitts? Where are you at with those two?
Kincaid's a little higher. And the only reason, because I think talent-wise and ceiling-wise, they're probably both very similar. They're in the same tier. It really comes down to what have I seen on the field. And the disappointment with Pitts is real, even though it's kind of explained away. And now, you know, the door is swung wide open with new quarterback, new coaching staff. What is that going to look like? But I still haven't seen it. Yeah. And I would have no problem, though, because they're in the same tier. I would have no trouble trading down from Kincaid with a bump. I would be comfortable with that because I think there's enough optimism and enough upside now with the changes for Pitts to make that, as long as the compensation offset it. In a vacuum, drafting in a startup, I would still go Kincaid by one or two spots over Pitts. But again, with compensation coming back, I have no problem. We talk about it all the time, trading down in a tier for a bump. Mm-hmm. And as long as, you know, I liked what I was getting back, I would be comfortable with Pitts. Easily.
Yeah, I went through, I was trying to find some deals, you know, with these guys involved in 12 team super flex, you know, area. Probably the one I saw that kind of like what you just kind of mentioned, Kincaid got moved for Kyle Pitts in 2 seconds. I don't necessarily like, yeah. I mean, it's fine. If he's in that tier, you know, 2 seconds, it was a 202 and a 210. So I guess you're still early second in there. I don't hate it. I don't hate that deal at all, but I think you could get a little bit more. I think you could get a piece.
I would add, if I was moving Kincaid, I would be willing to add, you know, like I would do Kincaid third to get Pitts, you know, first or 25 first. I would add a little bit to the Kincaid side to bring it up so that my return wasn't a late to mid second or 2 seconds. I would want to get into that, you know, either the 2-1 or the end of the first to try to capitalize on that wide receiver depth if I was going to make that move. Because I do think Kincaid is set up, you know, if we're looking at it in April, Kincaid is set up for the better year just because lack of targets, even if they bring in another wide receiver, rookie wide receiver, he's still set up for, I just think, more targets in general. So that's definitely where I would go.
Hey, when has ever chasing targets in April gone wrong? That's what I like to say. Like, when has that ever gone wrong for fantasy managers out there? I do think that understanding now what's built into Kincaid's price in Dynasty Leagues, what you got to know is everybody assumes they're going to bring in somebody. So that's already built in. So know that, like, you're not getting like, a lot of guys out there were like, oh, he's the wide receiver one. Well, most managers aren't going to be like, yeah, he is the wide receiver one. Maybe you can do it. The worst thing you could do is just not, you know, go out of there and like, you know, offer things if you don't want. You could always try and do those things. But just to give you context, you got to understand that in terms of that value there. All right, next two, Puka Nacua and Garrett Wilson. So really, Puka's being valued a little higher than Garrett Wilson right now. So when you're looking at kind of their dynasty value, Puka's at wide receiver 6, Wilson's at wide receiver 7-8, depending on where you're out there. I have some deals for them, but what is your overall take with Puka and Garrett there?
Like Garrett a little bit more. Puka's bottom of that same tier. So again, it's one of those conversations where I would be happy to move off of Wilson for the right compensation coming back with Puka. But if it's in a vacuum and I'm picking between one of the two, I like Garrett Wilson just a little bit better. And I mean, that's not a knock on Puka. I mean, he's phenomenal. But I do think, though, that Wilson's value is kind of deflated just based on the fact that no one really knows what Aaron Rodgers is going to be when he comes back and what is that offense going to look like, where, you know, Puka ended on a high note and so much fanfare about his productivity. So I do think that they're much closer in value. So you may be able to move Puka for in a small piece of compensation to get Wilson back. Because I do think, again, Wilson's value is kind of compressed, just what we saw last year with the terrible quarterback play that he had to deal with.
The difference between Puka and Garrett Wilson right now in the dynasty market, from what I've seen, is a third round pick, essentially added to Wilson. That's essentially what it is. So if you feel like you want to kind of go get Wilson there, that's, you could probably get a third back, whether you think that's worth it or not in that tier. It's kind of up to you. But yeah, like he said, there is some devaluation there in terms of the market. We do have one of these. We have a trade. So what's up, people? I hope you're doing having a good night. I traded. Oh, it's a Debbie question, so I'll help you out with this one, Leo. I traded Stroud and Najee for JT, Michael Penix, Odunze, and Evan Stewart. Was that worth it? I need, you got to tell me if this is super flex. I'm going to pretend like it's super flex. If it's not super flex, then this deal looks a lot better in my opinion. If this is super flex, I still lean Stroud. I don't love trading Stroud for quarterbacks that I like, Michael Penix Jr. I don't know what he's going to be. I'm kind of down on him in terms of like what his draft capital will be. Okay. So super flex, excuse me, start 11. So I still lean Stroud, just because I like to have in that top five guy. I don't necessarily, I love Evan Stewart. Everybody knows me. They know I love Evan Stewart, but again, Debbie wide receivers, we've seen Kayshon Boutte. We've seen some of these guys not pan out the way that we have thought. So I don't necessarily love, you know, trading an elite asset like Stroud for those players. Now, JT is an elite piece. Like, I do think Jonathan Taylor is one of those guys that's like, hey, he's an elite piece. Odunze could be top 10 pick. Like, I don't think you did terrible. I think it's a ton of risk on your side, though. Like, you really need Michael Penix Jr. to get first round capital to really make this sound like that was your side there that you liked. What do you think in a vacuum? I know you don't know Evan Stewart. Maybe you do know Evan Stewart.
Yeah, that's to some degree, but I think that for me, in order to have pulled the trigger, I would have wanted May or Daniels as that second quarterback coming back instead of Penix. I think that would have, I would have felt more confident in one of those two other rookie quarterbacks from this draft class coming back in the deal. Would have felt safer. The Penix thing, based, you know, going along with what you had said, the Penix thing, we don't know what, and I think there's a lot of risk there. I do like, you know, I've commented many times that I like his throwing motion quite a bit. It's interesting, but I don't know how well he translates, especially with his injury history, at the next level.
Yeah.
So even if he does go in the first round, I don't know what that looks like. So for me, it would have had to have been Drake May or Jaden Daniels as that other piece coming back. And then I would have felt fine with it. As it stands right now, I lean slightly to the Stroud side.
Yeah, and I think just for me, elite quarterback is always where I'm going to lean on these deals, unless I'm getting something back where I'm tearing down a little bit. Jordan Love ish in those ranges. But, I mean, again, it can pan out. I'm never going to diss a trade at any point because we've seen these trades kind of happen. JT could help you contend this year. You know, Odunze could be very good. Evan Stewart might be a first-round pick next year. And you're like, hey, I got these three guys that are there. And then Michael Penix Jr. gets drafted by the Raiders in the late first, and now he's throwing to Davante Adams. Like, so there is definitely scenarios where that could be. But that's kind of where I would lean on that deal. All right, let's get some fact or fiction. So the one thing I wanted to do, because we're in weird land right now, is the Dynasty – is I went through some scenarios of like, you know, all right, is this a fact or are we crazy here in terms of like, we hear this all the time, but is that the way to win in Dynasty? Or is that what, you know, is that kind of like that mindset that we're coming into? So the first one that we have for fact or fiction, and we're going to kind of talk through it, is, you know, I hear this notion that you have to build around elite quarterbacks, wide receivers. That's how you're building now. If you don't build that way, you're an idiot, essentially. Like, that's not going to work anymore. This is the new way of kind of doing that. So what do you say to that, Leo? Fact or fiction that we have to build around elite quarterbacks and wide receivers, and that's the only way we're going to be able to build a dynasty team?
I lean more to the fact side simply because it's the path of least resistance. And I think when you factor in the productivity and the value associated with quarterbacks and the longevity associated with wide receivers, it just makes it so much easier to build your dynasty squad around that. The only caveat I'll add is that if you're doing a startup with 11 other managers and they all have the same philosophy, that makes things a little tougher. But You know, if we're just talking pure strategy, I think productivity, longevity, and just overall value in super flex of quarterbacks, that is the way to go if you truly want to come out of the gates ready to go.
Okay. And again, I always point this out. So right now, according to startup ADP that I've been looking at, wide receiver 24 is going in the sixth round. Running back 24 is going in the 10th round. So you're really looking at a 4-round difference between where these guys are getting drafted. And just knowing that, like, you might have to pivot a little bit. But in a vacuum, I do also agree that Bill O'Reilly quarterbacks, wide receivers are important there. But you can miss too. So like but I would say this, at the wide receiver position, I think you can afford some misses in that 6 to 10 range a little bit more because of how many good wide receivers are coming out every year and how much like that, just that veteran running back you can kind of plug in and play. And I always say, I generally love going flex in the wide receiver and flex. And like the more you get, great. But I do think that there is some ways that you could build rosters where you have a couple stud wide receivers. Maybe you missed out and, you know, I'm going to go trade for Joe Mixon or Devin Singletary for a third or stuff like that. You can plug those guys in too. Like there's ways to kind of after the initial build to kind of build out. And if you missed and the thing is, if you take running backs heavy early, even the top five guys, one they get hurt, your ceiling gets capped immediately. Their value gets capped immediately. And then you're really struggling to build that roster. Mm-hmm. All right, next one. Running backs are a luxury. So I feel like I know where you're going with this one, whether it's facts or fiction. But maybe a little bit of like, why? Or also like if they're a luxury, if we agree that they are a luxury, because I do think they are. So then when do we go do our luxury? When do we go get that luxury? When do we go buy us that fun piece?
Well, I think we need to add a chart. So I think elite running backs are a luxury.
Okay.
I think that spending that draft capital early or trade capital in an existing league, I think getting an elite running back is a luxury. I don't think it's a necessity. Where I think running backs transition from luxury to necessity is on the PPR capitalization aspect of what that running back brings to the table. Okay. Because I do think you're able to shuffle waiver wire running backs and you're able to invest late round capital in running backs. And there's always seems to be a surplus of aged running backs that are starting to, you know, end their runway and transition towards retirement. There's always a stable that you can pick from. It's how do you utilize that so that you're not spending on luxury or trying to capitalize on luxury. You're instead focusing on a higher floor and you're trying to benefit from that PPR involvement where you can get a steady stream from that position and have it be more of a necessity to your roster as opposed to, a luxury capital.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I mean, they are a luxury. Elite running backs are definitely a luxury. You know, guys like that we plug in, Jaylen Warren, those guys, they get talked like elite, like luxuries on Twitter and stuff, but they're not. Like they really aren't, because they are definitely interchangeable for a lot of things. But I do think that you hit the gold. Like, you know, based on your league settings, those running backs are luxuries. If it's standard, right, you're looking right at Derrick Henry is a luxury this year. And I think it's good to point that out because, you know, we have a lot of snobbish people that talk about like, oh, you should be playing these leagues only. Like, well, no, well, standard. You know, I think that there are some elite pieces based on that. I think it shifts it a little bit. Everything is modeled towards PPR. Half PPR is probably where I like it a little bit more because I think it levels the playing field on those kind of assets where you can have. But I agree. I think running backs are a luxury. Elite guys are there. Knowing when to buy, I think there's always opportunities to go buy elite guys. There's times where you can kind of move off of them. A good example of that, I've been getting a lot of questions. And I'm interested where you're at with this one. I'm getting a ton of questions right now with Marvin Harrison Jr. and Bijan Robinson, those two. And I get a lot of questions on like, all right, I have the 102, but I'm contending. Like, I don't need Marvin Harrison Jr. I have some elite wide receivers here, but I do need running back help. And every time, you know, I've been answering these things and looking at their and obviously context matters, but damn it. Like there's some teams where I'm like, actually Bijan might take you over the top. So is there anywhere you look at it where, you know what, moving Marvin Harrison, which is like a sin out there. You can't move Marvin Harrison. No way. For Bijan would be acceptable?
All depends on your running back. I mean, your wide receiver stable that you have on your roster. It really does. Because I do think Bijan is elite. And I do think with his age and with his profile and with a coaching change and with everything that's being talked about coming forward in Atlanta this year, I do think that it's worth the investment. And if you have two or three or four young wide receivers that are in the top, you know, three tiers and have longevity in front of them, then I'm good with that. I don't think I'm fine with that, whether you're talking Malik Nabers, whether you're talking Marvin Harrison, but that's where the, to me, that's where the tier ends.
Yeah.
It's Robinson or nobody else. Otherwise, it's straight wide receiver. He's the only one. Breece Hall isn't there. He's the only one that's in that tier for me overall, where we blend all the positions together, where I would say it's okay to make that move. I'm a big enough believer in what he brings to the table. I think he was, I think we saw it last year on the field when he wasn't handcuffed by poor coaching decisions where they weren't trying to, you know, jam Cordero Patterson down our throats or, you know, just you saw it with the spin moves, you saw it with the vision, you saw it with the ability to get skinny in the crease, you saw it with the burst. I mean, he is just a special talent. Again, shelf life is limited with running backs, but in this particular instance, I would do that.
Yeah. And that's why I was just interested to see, because I get these questions a lot and I'm like, damn it. Like that actually makes sense in terms of your build. And I like that. It's like, okay, who's that guy going to be? And it's hard because you look at the numbers and you're like, dang it, you know, 14 fantasy points per game. Like that's not going to move the needle at all. But context wise, he's going to smash this year. I think he's going to have a great year this year. Yeah. If you've built through quarterbacks, wide receivers, like we just talked about, and you're sitting there and you're like, it's my time, then go, don't be afraid to make that risk and challenge that. Cause yes, Marvin Harrison Jr. could be the next Jamar Chase, or he could be Akeem Butler. He could be, who is the other wide receivers that we all loved out there?
N'Keal Harry went N'Keal early. Harry, Laquelle Treadwell, Kevin
not
White.
Not saying he is, not no. saying they are, but you know, like that is that we already know what Bijan is. We saw that we could probably plug in that. So I think there, and it's fun taking risks sometimes too. Like it is fun kind of adding that in there.
Well, I'll tell you what though, if your top two wide receivers are Cooper Kupp and Davante Adams, then I'm probably leaning into Marvin Harrison because I need to restock that particular position. So it really, the deciding factor really comes down to what's your age and what's your talent level tier wise in that wide receiver group.
100%. Like, cause right now Marvin Harrison is being wide receiver five. Like that's where his dynasty rank is right now. So if that's the case, then, you know, I need, if I'm going to pivot off of Marvin Harrison Jr. for Bijan, I need Jefferson, Lamb, Chase, Amon-Ra probably on my roster. Mm-hmm. I got one of those four. Agreed. If I have one of those four and then I'm sitting there and my wide receiver two, possibly maybe it's Tyreek. Maybe I'm sitting there at Tyreek still there, or, you know, maybe you're looking at DJ Moore. You really like DJ Moore as that wide receiver two. And then like, if that's the case, then maybe I can make a case for it, but you could sit out there at one of those top four guys. And then maybe you still have Garrett Wilson still, cause you, the way they draft it, or maybe you got lucky with Puka and you're sitting there and like, okay, but I probably need one of those four. If I got one of those four, then I could maybe make that pivot, but it's hard to throw away Marvin Harrison Jr. as a top five guy already and then go off of him when you're sitting there with, like, you know, AJ Brown as your wide receiver one. That would be the struggle.
It's hard to go against consensus too, because when everybody's telling you Marvin Harrison, it's hard to be the contrarian and go, you know, go against what groupthink is saying. I thought you were going to ask me about Nick Chubb and what his value was simply because of the contract restructuring and that I thought that might have been a recent question that was hitting your inbox.
No, I don't. I don't really buy into running backs off of major knee injuries when they're 28-ish. Is he 28 now? He's up to 27, 28, somewhere in that range. I might have just way more older than you actually are. I apologize, Nick Chubb. But I'm out on that. Yep, okay. Yeah, I'm out. If someone loves him like Nick Chubb, you could go get like a second-ish maybe. All right. Like if you could pivot off of Chubb, that might be where you go. All right. This next one I am 100% fact on. Right, future first Eagle gold to me. I did see some people out there saying, like, I have seen people talk that it's not as much gold as it is. I think what they confuse this with is they think that you have to make every pick with that future first. Like, okay, well, I have 425 first. you're getting four picks. No, you're using that as capital. You're using that as ability to move off pieces and do those things and get creative, right? Like that's how I look at future first. I very rarely, if I have multiple first, use all those multiple firsts on a rookie pick. I usually diversify, kind of move off of it, maybe go to the next draft class, but they are 100% gold.
Yeah, agree. They provide, we talk about positive momentum on here all the time, being able mm-hmm. to move some of those picks forward and able you to diversify and maintain that positive momentum. They allow you to be draft active, which is critical to be able to capitalize on any of the windows we've talked about, whether it's daily value that could change on keep, trade, cut, or whether it's trading from tiers with getting some compensation back, whatever that looks like. You can't be as active as you'd like to be without, without having, I lost my train of thought. I was reading the text that came across. I'm too old to do both at the same time.
I do that to you,
but I appreciate that. Anyway, so yes, they are future. I mean, future first are gold. You got the other thing I say that you have to really pay attention to is you have to pay attention to the windows because the value will fluctuate. And depending on, we talk about using them to either be active or capitalize. Well, you want to do it when they're at their ceiling. And so that ebb and flow will change during the course of the year. So you need to pay attention to when those windows are so that you are getting max value, whether you're trading forward for positive momentum or whether you're cashing them in, whatever that looks like, take advantage of the window.
Yeah. And then like Jonathan put it on the screen here, I'll read it, Leo. I got it. So it says, agree with 100%. Had four firsts in one league and used two of my later ones to go get Herbert. Now my QBs are Stroud and Herbert. Yeah, exactly. Perfect. That's perfect. That's how you do it. And Leo brings up a good point that we try to harp on too, but having that capital, you don't want a dead dynasty team. And what I mean in that is like when there's no like a positivity outlook of your roster, when you're going through when you want to make deals and you're kind of going through your roster, like, no, I don't want any of these guys. Well, your league mates don't want them either. And that's where it really handcuffs you a little bit. Cause I have one of those teams where I picked up as an orphan and it's hard because you're going through it and you're like, you have to look at it from their perspective. Like, why would this person want this team? Really? The only thing that people really want always are picks. That's the number one thing. They're going to always kind of do a picks because we're all pretending like we're GMs when we're really not, but we're pretending like we're GMs and we love the idea of the unknown box and the picks there. So the more you can collect, even seconds and third, I think those are gold as well, depending on what your roster build is like. If mm-hmm. it's a really bad orphan, then yes, you need to really kind of look at, okay, I took over this orphan. What are some value here, right? Because you know, you could have been stuck with DeAndre Hopkins 2 years ago and you're like, oh, he's going to sign with a new team. He's going to do this. Hey, he's going to be up there. Now his depreciating value has just gone down and down and down and down. And had you kind of maybe moved it for a second, you could have got like an extra second, a big team taking Tank Dell. Maybe you grab, you know, one of these other guys that have popped off the rookie value. So I do think future first, but I think future seconds and thirds can be gold too, depending on what your roster looks like and how that build is and how bad it is. Cause you need some positivity. You got to have that. Cause you don't want to orphan your dynasty teams. Have some positivity on your roster where you can kind of go and, okay, hey, this is a positive. This is a good asset. This is a plus asset.
Yeah, agree 100%. We talk about what's the compensation coming back. And I've made a couple statements where I say I would add a third to that, or I would add a second to that in order to make that move. And so if you don't have those picks available to you to sweeten a deal or to level off compensation, again, limits your ability to be active and get the guys you want.
Yeah. Next thing, which is true. And again, we're going through these things and some dynasty managers would probably be like, well, duh, but we're not doing it just for you. We're talking dynasty in the vacuum for other people too. Like, and I think sometimes we forget about that, but you know, I see this a lot but I do this too. So like I played dynasty for a long time. Sometimes I look at my roster and like, gosh, my quarterbacks are dog shit. I really need a quarterback and I need to figure out how, you know, it's in April. It's in, you know, February, March. Okay. And people say this vacuum term that no needs in the offseason, which I do think is true to an extent, but you do need to know the needs of your team and how you're going to address that and the windows to address that, I think is important there. But I believe in collecting assets and doing all those things. So where are you at with this one? Fact or fiction?
I think it's fact. I think that as it's fact as long as your league's active. If you have an active league that you know that you're going to be able to dial in and make some moves to compensate for weaknesses as we get in season and we go from dynasty to redraft plus, 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 even more. As long as it's an active league, then I really don't consider there to be needs in the off season. The only other time would be is if you've deplenished all of your draft picks for a particular upcoming draft. Like now, if all of your 25 picks are already gone, there's a little bit of a need during the off season to try to recoup some of that to maintain positive momentum. If you are in a very slow league that doesn't make a lot of trades and doesn't tend to really speed up and get active as opening day nears, that kind of changes what the offseason looks like. And when windows open, you take advantage of them regardless. And you can kind of address some of your needs in the summer when those opportunities arise. But again, if it's active and there's good dialogue, good engagement, good communication within the league, then I don't think there really are any needs. But then again, don't kiss a perfect deal goodbye because you don't think you need to make a move, right? Capitalize if the deal's there and it happens to be May or June, then make the deal.
So I was kind of going through this and I want to see what you said. That's why I didn't add it to the sheet yet. I was kind of seeing if what you would think. So what I put on here is like, there's no needs, but the best windows I have found, and I've done this in different ways, quarterback, if you need a QB2/3, let's say you're a contender, I have found some of the best windows are actually early January, February, the old guys, the ones that kind of are carted off that like could have value, right? Like Stafford was one of those guys probably last year-ish. Baker Mayfield, like those type of guys, Russell Wilson, like those guys are the cheapest at that time because guys are trying to peel off of them off of their roster. So I like that window there. For running backs, I actually think January, February can be a fun need filler because they're cheaper because they're veterans and they're kind of old and like, oh, they're going to, you know, free agency is going to do it and you're going to have all these guys moving pieces. Now it's a risk. Don't get me wrong. There's a risk in taking running backs that early. But if you do want to fill a need and you really believe in a situation because you like, hey, I think that I can be that guy. Like I had Mixon on a lot of teams last year. I did a lot this year. It's still panning out for me. And then August and running backs too. I do think August plays a role, injuries camp coming up. And then obviously in the season, everybody knows that, but I do think that there's ways that your team is shaping up where you're like, hey, who are some running backs I can go get from some teams that maybe thought they were contending, but they're not quite there yet. What do you think about those windows? I didn't really have one for wide receivers. It's hard with wide receivers and tight ends, I feel like. But I do think quarterbacks and running backs have those windows.
Yeah, I think your wide receiver probably window probably opens up probably the same time your quarterbacks do in early transition into February, January, February. Especially if the quarterback is in question, if you know there's some transition going on in quarterback that can tend to devalue wide receiver in that same window. When it comes to running backs, I always found that a really good window was right after the draft because people tend to overvalue rookies coming into a particular situation. Okay. And there might be a veteran that's already there that's fairly established. And the belief is that it's the impact is going to be minimal. I mean, that happened to Mixon a couple times where where a rookie was brought in and they thought the rookie was going to steal some carries and it never materialized. I mean, we tend to overvalue what we think the rookie running back's role is going to be quite often, especially when you get out of the top five or six rookie running backs in a draft. And so I think that can be, if you believe in that veteran running back, that's a really good window. I think the most important conversation though about this segment is the fact that you've identified transitional windows where value becomes available. Yeah. And through legacy knowledge and through proof of concept, you've been able to figure out, okay, this is when I need to look for those things. And, you know, too often, I don't think dynasty players tend to look at things through that lens and are cognizant of those windows opening and closing. I think they notice they open, but I don't think it registers like I need to pay attention to this for next year. Yeah. I need to pay attention for this window. Is this something that happens on a cycle? And every year, this tends to be a window that opens. And I think that's critical. I think within your league, windows open. And I think within the NFL, windows open. And so to be aware of those and capitalize on those is critical. And notating when those windows are, right? We talk about taking notes, being able to evaluate. I know that I think that window opens up for running backs right after the draft because, you know, I had some notes that I took where I was able to acquire veteran running backs at a really discounted price because there was a incoming rookie that devalued that player. And ultimately, those players panned out for me. And so, you know, that became a staple to trying to rebuild a running back core on a, you know, for cheap on a contending team.
I think the point that I really liked, I mean, I liked all your points. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to sound like that. That's but the point that I liked a lot was the rookie running backs getting taken because in the draft, and I think that the reason why I liked a lot is because when you look at this class, everybody hates this class. But as soon as they get drafted, they're going to love this class. Like, it happens every year. Like, oh, wait, this guy landed here, this guy landed here. And so there is opportunity possibly to go out there and get some sneaky pieces where you're like, hey, I, you know what? You know, Jonathan Brooks goes to Dallas. Dallas really didn't add anybody. So they're like sitting there, oh, yeah, Jonathan Brooks probably can get overdrafted. But you know what? Dallas is a pain in the butt. And I bet you Dallas uses Rico Dowdle more than you think. And, like, there's ways that maybe, oh, he's dead asset. You get him for a fourth, right? And then you're that contender where you're plugging him in. Perfect example of that was probably Tank Bigsby from last year. And, you know, with ETN, oh, ETN's dead. Well, ETN wasn't dead, right? Like, and I'm a big ETN. I like ETN. Like, I liked him a lot last year. I like Tank, too. I thought Tank would get more work at the goal line. I thought we were going to see kind of maybe a little bit more split carries there. But there's definitely opportunities. I think Sean Tucker did that in a weird way. There's a lot of Sean Tucker stands out there. He had a workout video recently. They pop back up. It's like that that gif of like the little prairie dog. Like, yeah. I was like, holy shit, Sean Tucker truther. Haven't seen you for a year, but you're here now. But that happened a little bit with Rashad White, I think. I think that when you saw the Rashad White kind of stuff and, oh, well, he could take some work from them. So I think that is an amazing, a great point in terms of when you're looking at running backs. And where they land, even fourth or fifth round guys, they'll get excited about those guys too. Like, oh, hey, I love this spot for Braylon Allen. Oh, he went this location. Oh, I like him. Oh, hey, what running back went to the 49ers? What running back went to Miami? Okay, I like that spot. Or possibly, I don't think the Texans would do it, but maybe a rookie Texan, they'll take one. And then Joe Mixon's going to be even cheaper. He's still cheap, but he might be even cheaper now because they want a part of that offense. And they think, hey, he could be kind of that guy. So I think that's a good point. Kendre Miller, Tajay Spears, some of these other guys, they didn't really have those seasons that we expected. And I did point out, I asked who was going to have a better season next year, Tajay Spears or Kendre Miller. And then someone said, well, I'm really only hoping for 2025. And my big takeaway from that was, if you're already waiting for 2025 with these guys, you might as well just take a shot another second round running back this year. Because if you're waiting, if you don't think they're going to have any potential outcomes, you know, non-injury withstanding, then that's a problem. I feel like at the running back position.
Yeah, that's already a roster clogger on your team. If that's, you know, if you're already banking a year from now, you might as well churn that roster.
Yeah, 100%. All right, let's get to a couple more. But I probably don't get about. I know we have a couple questions, which we will get to towards the end of the hour. Jameson, I saw you put yours in there, so I will get to it. We've talked about trade within tiers, so we didn't need to go into that one. Let's talk about this one because this one I think is fascinating. I couldn't do the does not signal on my thing. So what that should be is young does not equal good. So I will fix that as you talk there. But what do you think about young does not equal good?
I think that there is a tendency in Dynasty to prioritize youth, right? We talked about it even with Stroud with the conversation about him being 22 years old. And you just tend to focus on youth at every turn. And what I've seen through the years through doing this for a very long time is there would be teams that would annually chase their tail, constantly go after the new shiny toy. They would have let me emphasize that if that's how you want to play, there's nothing wrong with that. There were a few squads that I had at the end of my dynasty run where I wasn't all that worried about competing for a title because I really liked the roster I had. And I knew there were some vulnerabilities, but I enjoyed the roster. So if that's how you want to play, that's okay. But if your main goal is to capitalize on value, to execute really well with the basics and to compete for a title year after year, then you have to have a balance. You know, I think young is always a positive to have because of the value that it provides because it's young, because your players have a long runway. There's always baked in value. But that doesn't mean that the baked in value is true productivity for your roster. And you have to balance that out. You know what? Let's compare it to this whole NIL portal in college basketball, right? So you talk about, can a John Calipari, when he was, before he left Kentucky, can he win with the one and dones? You know, he hasn't been able to. The balance seems to be you bring in a couple of blue chip recruits and then you balance with senior juniors experience through the NIL so that you're able to build a well-rounded roster. And that's what you want to do in Dynasty. You want to have young so that you have upside, you have positive momentum, you have baked in value, but at the same time, you also want to have productivity. So I guess that's how I would word it. Young doesn't necessarily mean productive. And that's kind of where I think it really lies.
Yeah, that's good because you're looking at it like it doesn't, you know, that youth doesn't get you fantasy points. Like you plug them in your lineup, they're not giving you like, you know, 10 points just because they're 22 wide receiver. Like I think that is a good point there. That's where the context come into place. I was trying to get some examples of this. I got a few, but if you have some, you have a vast knowledge of fantasy football history. So like, guys that just recently came to mind, I felt like people are chasing Rashad Bateman still. I think Rashad Bateman is one of those guys that people are still chasing out there. Jerry Jeudy, I put down in front of the wide receiver. I put Elijah Moore. Elijah Moore feels like that guy that people are still trying to chase down there. Trey Lance, I put down because I do think that there was very high expectations, top five guy. I wouldn't necessarily just be young equals good. I do think that rushing upside helped there because of what he did in college at North Dakota State. I couldn't think of any running backs because Kerryon Johnson's a good one, but I don't know. Like Kerryon was a good one because people really thought he could be that guy. Mixon was that guy. And then he actually panned out and like later on and we did those. What are some guys that we feel like we've been chasing fantasy points forever? Kyle Pitts, maybe, but he still had 1,000-yard season. So there's those guys too.
Yeah, the guy that came to mind right away for me was Paris Campbell because people have every time I turn around, if he has one decent practice, people are still believing that he's going to somehow transition and show what he's able to do.
This is a good one. Denzel Mims is a good one. That is a good one.
I mean, we felt that way about Treadwell for a while. Thought he was going to at some point blossom. Corey Coleman was a wide receiver right for the Browns that everybody thought was going to come in and transition and play well. And yeah, I mean, there's been so many over the course of the year that we hold on to as you know, dynasty players. And we just think that I'm going to carry this guy on my roster forever. What was it? Christine Michael was one that,
that's a blast
for everybody had forever. What was a Bishop Sankey was another one that, was, you know, came out and everybody was super high on and thought he was going to be phenomenal. So there's been a lot, you know, and that's where the hesitancy and not making some of those deals where you hit accept, even though it looks like it's obvious, because you just don't want to blow it because, you know, you haven't done the evaluation correctly.
I just showed my age because he did not mean Denzel Mims. He meant Marvin Mims, which is possibly people could be chasing Marvin Mims too. And then yes, I was Brevin Jordan will always be my bae. I love Brevin Jordan. You just never quite panned out.
Rico Gathers was mine. For the Cowboys, Zeus. Yeah. Oh man, I thought he was going to be something, and he just—you know—I mean, I had so many Rico because I love those, you know, obscure tight ends that you can kind of hide on your roster that had played basketball at one point, and you think that they're just going to materialize. And he was, you know, everything that I saw in training camp. The guy was so impressive, and it looked like a mountain, and it was like this guy is going to be so difficult to cover over the middle of the field, and he. The only place Rico Gathers still, you know, lives is in my heart, I think.
You know, it's funny. We actually were talking about Rico Gathers in the Discord. We have a bunch of degenerate Cowboy fans in our Discord that just, we just are depressed together. And like, someone was like, who is that who is that tight end we drafted who was just a basketball player and it never panned out? And I could not remember it. Okay, first of all, here Swift has kind of panned out. All right, I love DeAndre Swift, but like, let's not, the book is not over on DeAndre Swift. Killing me out there. And then John Metchie, yeah, he was in there too. There's some guys in there, even running backs. I do think we were chasing, like, I think Sean Tucker could fit in that category maybe for some. Obviously, the draft capital rookie, I mean, he's going fourth round, but I do think people are expecting like big, you know, pop off there for some of these guys. You know, there was that.
Who was the running back from Wisconsin that came out the same draft class, I think, as, was it, did he come out with DeAndre Hopkins? No,
not Melvin Gordon. You're not talking about
No. There was another one. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. I remember him going early in rookie drafts. Like he went.
There's Monty Ball.
There you go. That's who I was thinking of. Yeah, that's who I was thinking of. Monty Ball. He went early. He was a top five pick that year in rookie drafts and really never materialized or produced much.
Yep. 100%. All right. Let's, we got time for one more. And I'd like to get your thoughts on this one. So this is a big one. David Gaultieri, I went on podcast with him recently. Mm-hmm. And I know he talks about this all the time. And he gets a lot of shit for this. And I see him post like underdog rankings. And I see him post that. And he says, hey, it's good in Dynasty to look at startup values every year to judge kind of trade values, not trade calculators. I think calculators are whatever. You want to use them? I don't care. Whatever. You using a calculator does not affect whether I put submit, yes or no, or accept it. Like, I could care less if you use a calculator. If I use a calculator and someone's doesn't accept it, that doesn't hurt my feelings either. Like, I don't think it's that bad of a thing. But I do like his, he always talks about this, think in terms of startup value. I believe in it. I think this is fact. I think you have to look at startup value and the fluctuations there. And I think you can go through ADP and find some values of areas. And I know that's what he talks about. Do you agree there?
100%. So I just actually submitted an article for Football Guys that kind of went into some more detail on what the variance in rankings, right? How valuable is that? And for me, when I search for variance, when I add contextual layers to my rankings, which I think is critical. I think that not all rankings are created equal if you're building, if you're doing a rebuild, or if you're contending for a title, or if you're trying to capitalize on, you know, some of the ageism in Dynasty and you're looking to add a Davante Adams or Cooper Kupp to your roster, something like that. I think all of that context matters outside of your league rules and format and scoring, which is vital. When I do that, when I create my own set of rankings and do it for a particular league or a particular strategy, one of the things I want to incorporate outside of just consensus rankings is startup value, because I think that's vital, because that's a true indicator of what people are willing to invest. Yeah. Now, granted, that changes on a week-to-week basis. As you get closer, we see that with, you know, all of the keep trade cut sites like that, you see the values flipping, but startup cost is investment cost, and that matters. So when I do that spreadsheet, and I think we talked about it in episode 2 or 3 of this podcast, I weight startup value heavier than consensus value, because I think it's more important than consensus value for giving you that baseline on what you can expect as an investment price.
Yeah, no, we're on the same page here. I agree too. I know it's one part of the data point. Yes, Brian talked about that too in the comments. Yeah, it's one part of the data point, but because cost may fluctuate, but not that much in my opinion. I do think that when you investment cost matters. What they invested in that player, that definitely matters. And that's a perception of the value of that player. If someone drafts somebody over ADP, you're not going to get him for cheap no matter what. Like the whole year, even if he's not performing, he's going to have that investment price still baked in. I still know where I drafted guys. I still know where I drafted Bryce Young, unfortunately, last year. Like, so that plays into his value now. Sure. And that's 100% there. I do want to get to this because it was in our Discord, and then I will talk to our Patreon, and then we'll get to those. If you have any comments in terms of just thoughts or trade questions, we'll get to them real quick. But do you need two top quarterbacks to compete in Superflex? So I go back and forth on this, because my opinion is you don't need two. But if you don't have two top 12, you better have one top five. That's kind of where I lean on this one, where it's like, hey, I got a guy that can finish consistently in the top five, not week in, week out, possibly. Maybe like, hey, maybe he's not very consistent, but there are some boom weeks there. I do think that you need a quarterback that still finishes in the top 15. So, like, you still need a guy that's going to have a top five ceiling and in a top 15 kind of floor. That's kind of how I look at Superflex. That's why I don't mind taking a shot on Richardson if I have, like, a Goff, a Cousins, or someone like that in the back end where they can kind of fluctuate in between those picks there. I think you need two to compete in now Dynasty because the way the quarterback's getting valued. I think before you were getting lucky. I did win a league one year, and it's still the funniest championship I've ever won. And it was with Mac Jones and Zach Wilson as rookies. And I had Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson and all those guys in the roster. And I won that league. And it's against a bunch of analysts. So I still hold that near and dear to my heart. But I think those are more one-offs than anything. I do think that you need a quarterback that has top five potential and in top 15 floor. That's kind of how I look at Superflex.
I think that's a really good lens to apply. I think the way I would answer this is I've seen it done. I've seen other managers be successful, not necessarily year over year, but have winning seasons with rosters that were built without two top quarterbacks. Personally, I would say I need two top quarterbacks because I've never truly been able to execute a strategy where I've been able to focus on just one top quarterback and then fill in the gap and have drafted well enough everywhere else. Well, I take that back. Last year's fishbowl, I did really well, and that's kind of what I did, but that's not dynasty format. But being super flex, I had Josh Allen and Russell Wilson and was still able to make it to the final. I forget what I made it to, final 500 or 300 or something like that. But I was able to do that based on baking so much productivity into my wide receiver positions. But from a dynasty perspective, I've never been able to do it. I've never been able to execute it where I've waited, come away with one top quarterback, one middling quarterback, and I haven't been very successful. So personally, I need it. And I know that. And because I know that, that's how I would base my strategy, make sure I get that. But I have seen it done. And there are some folks who are far more comfortable in that. I can feel the hair on the back of my neck as I get into round four without that second quarterback, and it's not comfortable. So I prefer to avoid that and invest in two quarterbacks early myself.
It's not comfortable. It really depends on where you're drafting from this offseason. Like, if you are drafting from, like, it's weird. If you're sitting there, like, there's a way that you're sitting in that top five area and you're like, hey, at least I get a guy and I'm going to wait for Kirk Cousins later or something like that. Like, there's a way to do it. But yeah, definitely. And everybody feels it too. And where you're at when that run starts is really where you start pooping your pants a little bit, because if that quarterback run starts and you're on the back end, you're like, oh, I got to get in there. And then then the price instantly goes up because everybody knows it's happening. So like, that's the funny part about startups. I love watching. And if you get those two elite quarterbacks, you kind of don't have to worry about that. Like, you're kind of like, hey, I don't need necessarily to worry about the runs where they're at that position as the value falls, those type of things. But it definitely, you pucker up a little bit when it gets like, oh my gosh, who am I starting as my QB2 this year? Is it Baker Mayfield? Is it those guys towards the bottom? And I think that definitely gets concerning there.
And I think the other piece to that is that, you know, once you leave that draft, quarterbacks are just more expensive. So if you did leave the draft without two and you're planning to make some move, you're going to pay for it one way or the other. You're either going to pay for it with draft capital when you invest, or you're going to pay for it in trade acquisition cost if you need to fix your quarterback position in season, or you're going to pay for it with sunken costs with your draft picks because you're going to have to draft that quarterback. So the price, you're going to pay the iron price at some point. It's just a question of when are you going to pay it?
Yeah, that's true there. I want to get to this question, and we'll be getting out of here. He says, James, and this Jameson's a really great guy. I appreciate you tuning in, and you're a really, really good dude, so I appreciate that. Have a super flex team that needs an overhaul on the wide receivers. He has CMC as his main piece and wants to sell high. How would you guys go about it, or try to target to get a good return on investment? So you're trying to figure out, okay, how you go about getting rid of CMC, which he is one of the hardest players to get rid of at this point, because He's kind of reached his ceiling apex, but he's probably worth more than what you could probably get for him. So he's kind of that weird area in there. I've seen some really bad deals for CMC. Like someone moved CMC for Bryce Young and James Cook. I would not do that. I would rather just go for it, figure out a way to just try to go win my league than that. What is he worth to you? Is he worth like, you know, couple first if you could get him, or do you want, like, to me, if I'm moving CMC, I really like something back. If I can pivot down, or I guess up to Jahmyr Gibbs would probably have to be the case. It's just hard because I'd probably try to target wide receivers, but no one's really buying a running back at his age with those elite wide receivers that we talk about. So he's definitely in that weird tier that is concerning. So where are you going with this one?
I think for me, it would really come down to what's my strategy window. I don't think now is your window. As much as you'd like to come away with your wide receivers and be content in, you know, heading into July, be feeling like you've, you know, made some major advancements, I don't think that's going to happen. So I think what I would do is I would be studying the rosters of the other league mates, and I would be looking for title contenders who have a gap in their running back stable, but do have some extra capital in their wide receiver grouping. And I would write that down, and I would be ready to move on that should one of their, if they're weak at running back and they have an injury, significant injury in during the, you know, summer training camp or preseason games, I would look to capitalize on McCaffrey's hot start to a season. I think that's when your window is going to open, because right now everyone thinks they can win. Basically, with any good team thinks they can win with the roster they have. They're not looking to really overpay. At least the sharp players aren't looking to overplay to solidify that running back position in April. Yeah. They will look to solidify that position in September. And so again, look, check those rosters. The other, if it's a 12-man league or 12-person league, look at the other rosters. Pick three, pick four that have a vulnerability at running back, have a surplus of wide receivers, because that's what you're looking for. Start crafting deals now. You can say, I'd like to move CMC for a downgrade at running back, but they have a wide, they have four really good wide receivers, and I want one of these two back. Build that deal now, and then, you know, then you'll be able to be ready to move on it in September when the opportunity presents itself.
The best, 100%. And the best, like the tier of wide receivers you're looking at, like if you went now, you're probably moving CMC for like that Olave London tier. And that's the, I hope they get better tier, where like, I hope they hit their ceiling and they're doing better now. If you wait till September, you might be able to get into the other tiers that we're talking about, like the, you know, the Amon-Ra Puka, Garrett Wilson, possibly.
Yep.
You could be in that range, possibly. So that's how I would look at CMC. Like, if you don't have to move him, you don't need to. Like, I don't think his value changes that much this offseason. This is what it is, and it's going to shoot up a little bit when he, you know, he goes out and has 37 fantasy points the first week or whatever it's going to be, because he's insane, his volume there. I do hear the narrative that the Niners might take a running back. That doesn't, they're in win now contention mode. They're going to give CMC the ball as much as they need to. So I do think that it doesn't really hurt his value either. Even if they take a running back in the fourth, fifth round or the third, they've taken a running back in the third round for the last like four drafts. It doesn't change. CMC's value is going to be there, but that's where that tier is right now. I think his tier right now is Olave London-ish. Mm-hmm. I'd rather be in that Wilson Puka range. I'm on.
Yeah, and look to see who drafts. I mean, this wide receiver class is deep, right? So look to see where, whose squad those wide receivers land on, because that will change the overall value of that wide receiver group for that team. If all of a sudden they add a Malik Nabers, they might be willing to part with a Garrett Wilson if they're already filling the hole behind them with Malik Nabers. And then look at, you don't have to look at just a one for one or a one for two. You could add a piece, as if you're looking to revamp your whole roster, you can add another aging productive piece to CMC and really go after aggressively to a title contender. Mm-hmm. And you know, and add a potential 25 or 26 first rounder to any deal you're getting back, because you want to continue that positive momentum that we've talked about all show.
Yeah, 100%. All right. Another good show here, Leo. Appreciate you hopping on with me. Any final thoughts here?
No, man, I really just want the draft to show up because navigating the Twitter streets or the X streets now with all of the, you know, just we're at a point now where the spin cycle has just hit in ridiculous speeds. And I'll just be glad when we get some serious content to actually talk about.
I've been taking a little mini break. I have not been on social media for the last few days. So I didn't smarter see the jump narrative and all that stuff. So I've been trying to take a little break, which is a good time. Right now is a perfect time to take a little break from the whole social media. So we appreciate you guys. Thank you for tuning in. We're back in a couple of weeks.